Hi, welcome to Governance Bites. I'm Mark Benicevich, and it's my pleasure today to have David Greenslade with me. David is the founder of the Strategy Group, which is an entity that is involved in teaching financial advisors, including compliance, governance, and also is involved in auditing financial advice firms and auditing the advice. David himself has a very strong, long background, initially in the military, and is now the chair of the New Zealand Defence Force Charitable Trust, as well as sitting on a number of other boards. So a very, very experienced governor and compliance person, and it's an absolute privilege to have time with you. So thank you very much, David. I really appreciate your time.
Pleasure. Yep. Happy to be here.
So first question that I'd like to ask you, I'm going to start with a couple of specific questions. What's the importance of learning and development for directors?
Oh, look, it's vitally important because we live in a world of rapid change. So the world around us is evolving, and as far as its expectations, as far as regulatory environments, as far as when we're looking at sport, as far as how sponsors look towards a sport and whether they should allocate funds to it or not. And so as a board, we've got to be looking at who are we serving? Are we serving them appropriately? And then what else can we do to better service their needs? Whereas if we think what we've done for the last 15 or the last 20 years will take us into the future, then we're sadly mistaken because we're behind the eight ball, simply because the world is changing and the speed of change is increasing.
Right. So once you're on a board, having ongoing training is really essential. What about that initial training? So when you're someone's first appointed to a board, maybe in the sports world in particular, often there's no governance background involved. So what sort of skills should a new board member seek to attain when they first get appointed to a board?
Okay, so there's two levels that we've got to look at. The first one here is intrinsic personal skills, and I'll come back to that. And then the second one is the board's collective skills. So the last thing a board should have is a whole lot of people with the same skill set and the same experience base, because all you then do is you get groupthink. And then suddenly the business or the sports body can become very hierarchical, because it's based on the sporting prowess or the length of time someone has been on a board or their status within that that sports body. And so what we need is diversity of thinking. Diversity doesn't come from whether you're male, female, or whatever gender. It comes from your collective background, the way you approach things and your experience and things like that. So when we're looking for board members, we need to make sure that we're getting board members that will fill the collective skill set. So someone may have, or everyone may have basic skills, and then some may have expertise, be it in, say, accounting, legal practice, or whatever. But what we then need to do is identify where are the gaps amongst the others, and we need to find someone that will help complement and fill those gaps. So that's part of the board's collective area. The second one we look at is the individual skill set of each board member. And initially, probably what we've got to look at is humility, which you look in any of the institute of directors or any form of governance stuff, they don't talk about humility at all. And you think you're at the top of the food chain, but the reality is you're not. Your job is to govern and to provide the right environment, the right resources, the right whatever is required for those in the sporting body that you govern. So you're there to serve, and egocentricity has no place, particularly in a sports body or in a governance body, because it's all about them as an individual as opposed to looking after those that we serve. So humility is really important. What we then need is the ability to think very broadly, because the last thing we should be doing in a governance role is becoming myopic in our thinking. We've got to be looking wider and going, not only should we look at what are the changes happening within our sports body, but we should look at it and go, what is happening in other sports bodies? How are they evolving? How are other stakeholders? And stakeholders are people like sponsors. It's the actual members that are participating in the sports. It might be their localized or national governance bodies, and so on and so forth. We've got to understand, who are these stakeholders? What do they expect and want? And how are their needs changing? So therefore, we've got to be able to think really, really widely and go, we've got to have the ability and also the maturity to go, what we did before is not going to cut the mustard for where we want to go into the future, and be open to change. And then once we've identified that we should be changing something, we've got to then thirdly have the analytical skills to then go, okay, so this is where we may need to move to. Now, how do we get there? Mm-hmm. What are the advantages of going there? How soon do we have to go there? What are the risks of going there? And so on and so forth. So you've got to be able to work your way through those things. The other thing that comes into it is understanding we are not there as a board to manage. Our role is to govern it. So that means we set the strategic direction of our sporting body as to where we want to go and what we're trying to achieve. And that strategic direction will keep changing. So you've got to constantly check in every year and go, what we put in place for the next 3 years, does it need a bit of a tweak along the way? Because it will always need tweaking as we go. So we set the strategic direction, and then we find and we identify who is going to implement our strategic direction. So a key role of any board is to identify who is going to do the work. Who's going to be the CEO or the general manager or the chief operating officer who's going to tangibilize this and get the message out and then be able to report back?
And that implementation is
the next thing we've got to be able to do, yeah, is to go, we need to be able to understand how our sporting body is going. So what are the key performance indicators that measure success? Once we've identified what they are, we've got to go, so how do we measure these key performance indicators? How do we get timely, accurate reports coming through to us at the global sporting governance level to keep us informed with the dynamics? Because if we don't have timely, accurate reports that are free of emotion, that are free of vested interests, they need to be agnostic and accurate. If we don't get that sort of information, then strategically we will set the wrong strategic direction.
Right.
And as a result, we won't achieve our goals. So that gives you, say, four to get started with.
Right. So you want management to be delivering timely information to you to help you make those decisions and discern whether or not the strategy's on track. Right.
Yes, but don't let management dictate that. You know, as a board, we've got to identify what's important from a strategic perspective.
Absolutely. Thank you. Now, you've alluded to this a little bit in the discussion of both not-for-profit and for-profit entities in our discussion so far. Is there a difference in governance for not-for-profit and for-profit, apart from the objective of whether they want to earn a profit or not earn a profit? Or is governance kind of fundamentally the same?
The skill sets are the same. The principles you follow are the same. The stakeholders vary. And the output as to who you're serving changes. So in a typical corporate governance role, you serve the stakeholder, the shareholders primarily, but that, as you're seeing globally, is expanding out to cover environmental, social issues, and obviously clients and customers. So even that concept of you're there to serve the shareholders primarily is evolving. When we look at a sporting body, it's all about, are we serving the needs of our sports people? But then increasingly that is changing as well, because sure, it's about those who participate in our sport, but increasingly we're saying it's also about those who watch the sport.
Yes.
Because you can have people participating, but often you need the people watching so that you can get the dollars so that you can make things cost effective and be able to expand and achieve some of the newly established goals.
Right. So the governance itself is essentially the skills are the same. It's just what you're trying to achieve with that governance and who you're trying to serve is different. And is that also the case? Being an entity that teaches governance and having an academic institution and strategy group, you'd be aware of overseas differences. Are there any significant differences in governance overseas, or is fundamentally governance is governance?
I'd say yes and no. So at a theoretical level, governance is governance and the principles are the same. But when you move into different countries, there are different cultural issues that will
Yes.
come into it.
Yes, of
So
course.
in some countries, women don't have the same ability to voice their opinions, nor do junior people have the ability to voice their opinions. So that can often hold back some sporting bodies, and what you end up with is a couple of stars, but overall the sporting body doesn't sort of rise to the global sort of top because you haven't got that diversity of thinking. There are also other cultures where everyone demurs to age and go, just because you're older than I am and you've been there longer than me, I've got to listen to you all the time. So in a more sort of Western type of governance structure, like in New Zealand, all of those things have a part to play, like age and experience and all of those. But it's all about having respect for one another, putting your egos aside, being humble about these things and going, let's work for the common good. And let's understand that robust, enlightened discussions will actually benefit all of our participants to a far greater degree. So in summary, I'm saying the principles are the same, but the way we actually run board meetings will change over time. And that leads into the role of the chair. So where you have a chair that has a global membership, and you've got people that have these cultural sort of variances, the chairman has to be far more hands-on in trying to coach out of people information around their views and their thoughts. So they have to work a heck of a lot harder
Right.
where you've got these cultural differences.
David, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate having the time with you, and I look forward to catching up again next time we have the opportunity. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching, and I'll look forward to seeing you in the next episode.